Matt Williamson and Ryan McDowell.
Welcome into another Dynasty Blueprint. I'm your host, Ryan McDowell, joined as always by Matt Williamson. Matt, how are you today?
I am fantastic. How's it going?
Going well. Just like our last episode, I'm excited to talk more NFL draft. We're now less than 3 weeks away. It's getting so close we can smell it.
No question. Let's jump in, though. We got Matt Miller today, and we don't have a lot of time, so no fluff. Let's just talk draft, man.
Absolutely. We are glad to have Matt Miller, the NFL draft lead writer at Bleacher Report. You guys all know him and always accessible on Twitter. It's one of the things I love about you, Matt. We're glad to have you here today.
Yeah, I'm always happy to, especially to hang out with Williamson, who, like, early in my career, I don't know that anyone was nicer to me or more helpful and like just helping me figure stuff out, you know, as a guy who, I always tell people I was like a very bad high school football player that loved the game and needed to learn. And, you know, Matt was one of the good people back then who kind of took me under his wing a little bit. So I'm always happy to do a favor.
Yeah, absolutely, man. That was awesome. It was quite a while ago, making me feel old, dude.
That makes me feel old. I know.
Well, Matt, you've got a brand new 2-round NFL mock draft. And on this show, of course, we're talking fantasy football. We're talking dynasty. So we're going to focus on those four positions, quarterback, running back, wide receiver, and tight end. And this is a great year for us fantasy football players because there's so many talented offensive skill position players. You've got a ton of them going in your first couple rounds. So we probably won't get to talk about all of them today, but I do want to hit on a few significant players. The first one I want to ask you about is at the fifth spot, which is scheduled to be the Tennessee Titans, but you are projecting a trade. So I know that's pretty rare for you. Tell us a little bit more about what you're seeing there.
Yeah, like you said, I try to never predict trade because I feel like, I don't know, almost like you're robbing those teams a little bit, you know, of like the teams who actually have the pick. So you mess things up. So, but I wanted to do it this week because this is something that I'm starting to hear a little bit of like buzz about, is that the Browns could be trying to move back up. And so you start to look at, okay, which team would like to move out? And I think if you want to get a quarterback, you have to get ahead of the New York Jets. So that's what I had happening here in this week's mock draft. And, you know, last year the Titans and Browns were trade partners. So it's easy to make that same phone call and say, okay, like let's do this dance again. And, you know, the Browns are able to come up and get Trubisky at 5. And you know, I think I actually reported this at the combine, was that everyone you talk to will tell you that Hugh Jackson loves Mitch Trubisky. And so it's a smoke screen. It's a smoke screen, but they're not going to draft him at 1. So I don't know if it is a smoke screen because he's most likely not going to be there at 12. If you're not picking the kid at 1, I don't know that there's a lot of value in putting out a lie about if you like a player or not. So as of now, you know, like you said, there's 3 weeks, a lot of stuff could change, but as of right now, like I feel pretty strongly that if the chance is there to get ahead of the Jets and get a quarterback, I think the Browns would do it.
You know, this makes some sense because, I mean, like you said, Tennessee has moved back recently. That's certainly, you know, sort of in their DNA. They've done it with the, you know, they've talked to the Browns before. And they're kind of in wide receiver no man's land at 5. You know, you would think they want Williams or Davis. Real quick, you think Trubisky is the number one quarterback on the Browns board, and is he number one on your board?
Yeah, I think he is on both boards. I really do. For me, you know, quarterbacking is such an inexact science, as you guys know. But, you know, it's looking at traits plus potential, you know, character, wiring, all the little things that go into the position. I like that from Trubisky. Like, having talked to all the top quarterbacks in the draft, like, I enjoyed talking to him. I think he's very down to earth. He's a very hard worker. He's just this humble, you know, unassuming kind of guy who you could tell his teammates love him. Like, when I talked to Ryan Switzer, like, all he had to say were good things about Trubisky and how hard they've worked. And it's like, okay, well, like, give me examples. And he's like, well, you know, we were roommates and, like, you know, we stand up all night studying the playbook together and, you know, going through all these processes together, even before they were on the field, you know, just taking the mental reps. So I love that about him. I think his accuracy is good. His arm has been underrated. You know, he is a dual threat. Like, people who maybe just look at Mitch Trubisky and don't actually watch him play might not get that, but like, he is a very accomplished runner. And, you know, I compared him to Derek Carr, who was one of my favorite players of the 2014 draft. So it's like pretty high praise, you know, from me when I look at Trubisky.
And Matt, I think you made a good point with the Titans at five. They've been linked to a wide receiver so often, but five does seem a little rich for either Williams or Davis. So a move down makes sense for them as well. Maybe having their choice, at least in Matt's mock here, of the first wide receiver. And Matt, you have them taking Williams at 12. And then right off the board after that is Corey Davis to the Arizona Cardinals.
Before you mention that, though, we skipped over O.J. Howard going 10. I like Howard better than either one of these receivers, but do you think Buffalo would take him over a wideout? Apparently you do. I mean, I guess I was answering my own question.
Yeah, I do. Some of this is, you know, that inside knowledge that you pick up on the road. Some of it is my ranking a little bit with this pick, but I'm with you. I think O.J. Howard is he's as close to can't miss as there is, just because what he does from an athletic skill set, what he does as a blocker, the way he kind of dedicated himself to becoming a better player after falling in Nick Saban's doghouse early on in his career. He's just a super clean prospect. So if I'm the Bills, and I feel like they really need to, you know, they need a base hit after missing hard in some draft picks. So getting someone like Howard, you know exactly who he is. So he might not have the huge upside of David Njoku, but like, you know exactly what you're getting with this guy. And he's a very good player, very hard worker, high character guy, great athlete. So I do think, especially in that offense, that a tight end becomes pretty valuable, especially, I mean, you know, in this day and age, that line between tight end and receivers is blurring pretty hard.
Sure.
Matt, you mentioned Njoku there. He was the next player I wanted to ask you about. You have him coming off the board towards the back of the draft to the Lions at 21. Is this an indictment of Eric Ebron? Are they ready to move on with him? Are they that dissatisfied or disappointed with Ebron?
I think it's a little of both. I think some of it is you have a general manager who definitely understands the value of a two tight end set coming from New England and all the things they've been able to do there with, you know, with two big bodies at the position. And I think some of it is that, like, Njoku is he's a better player than Eric Ebron. He might not be as athletic, but I think his short area quickness is better. I think his work ethic is a lot better. His actual drive on the field, he's a better blocker. It's just like he has a better motor overall. So I don't know if it's an indictment on Eric Ebron, but it would definitely hopefully light a fire under him to, you know, hey man, you were a top 10 pick. You need to live up to these expectations, and you have a great quarterback. You have an offensive coordinator who could scheme the hell out of a game. So like, let's put it all together. And so you look at, I think you look at that offense with what they have at receiver, like giving them another big body in the middle of the field. It's just like a match made in heaven, in my opinion.
Matt, the Lions defense is a nightmare, though. I mean, if they were to go defense, do you think Njoku goes to the Giants, goes to Denver? I mean, those are the two landing spots I think are pretty logical for him.
Yeah, I think so. I think you could look at Denver. If they don't go offensive line, absolutely be a great fit. You mentioned the Giants. That seems like a New York Giants pick, right? Like, that definitely seems like something they would do in terms of trying to get athletic pass catchers and give them some size, because I have a very small wide receiver core. Even with the addition of Brandon Marshall, you know, like, Odell is a small guy in the middle of the field, is going to be an area that they could attack. So I can see Detroit going Derek Barnett in the way that the draft order fell in that mock draft that I posted. I could see, you know, maybe Taco Charlton. They could go a lot of different directions here. I would think that after going tackle last year in round one, that, you know, makes sense to go back and go edge rusher and try to get someone opposite Ezekiel Ansah. But I also was torn between this idea of having two athletic tight ends and what that can do from a game-changing perspective.
Matt, I think one kind of emerging storyline, and you mentioned this in your latest article, is the chance that the quarterbacks could come off the board later in the first round rather than the top 10 or top 15. And also, we've got some teams who are looking to replace their aging starters. That you have the Kansas City Chiefs taking a quarterback. You've got the Giants taking a quarterback. The Saints have been rumored to be looking at a quarterback as well. And then, of course, we know about Houston's needs. So just talk about, I guess, how you're seeing the value of those quarterbacks, Kaiser, Mahomes, even Deshaun Watson currently.
Yeah, it's weird out there right now. Like, I continue to hear, you know, Trubisky's going to go in the top 10, you know, whether it be through a trade up or whatever. For the rest of the guys, it's hard to find a consensus. You know, it's hard to find five teams that will say, yeah, we have a round one grade on Deshaun Watson. And like, I think that's the thing. Like, you'll talk to people out in the league and they'll say, yeah, I think Watson goes in the first round. Okay, well, what grade do you guys have on him? Oh, we have a two. And it's, you know, it's like, okay, well, you think someone else is going to draft him, but you guys aren't. And it's kind of the same way with Mahomes too. It's like, everyone will tell you, yeah, he's going to go late 20s. Like, it's going to happen. But I haven't talked to one team that has a round one grade on Pat Mahomes, even though he has some great tools. And so I think that's what's hard with this quarterback class is they are talented guys, but they all have some warts. And so it's almost like, you know, you look at the draft and it's like, okay, well, quarterbacks are going to go early. It's always going to happen. So it'll just happen again this year. And you start to fall into that trend a little bit of, okay, well, we're probably going to see three or four quarterbacks drafted in the first round. You know, some people would even tell you five if teams trade back up to get Davis Webb. So I think with the quarterbacks, like I don't love any of them. I gave Trubisky like a mid first round grade. I gave the other guy second round grades. I gave Davis Webb and Nate Peterman third round grades. But just because the need of the position and because of teams like the Giants, the Steelers, the Cardinals, the Chiefs, the Steelers, they're all spending so much time with these quarterbacks, you know, and multiple visits with them that maybe I'm over connecting some of the dots, but it just seems like these teams are spending a lot of time investigating these quarterbacks to not be drafting one.
Yeah, it's interesting because there's, you know, you just mentioned a couple teams, let alone Houston and
Right,
there's a lot of playoff caliber teams that could get a franchise quarterback, you know, that usually that aren't picking in the top 10 and rarely are picking in the top 10, that maybe they look at it and say, well, these guys fall to us. How do we not take Ben Roethlisberger's replacement or, you know, Eli's replacement? But of course, then you're sacrificing the win now theory.
Exactly. And like the Giants are a great example because I feel like Eli has really started. We've started to see that arm regression from him.
Yeah, he really worries me.
Yeah. So, but like your fan base probably hasn't accepted that. So they are still in that we got another shot, you know, let's load up for a run. But if I'm Jerry Reese, I'm terrified of, we don't know how much longer this kid's arm is going to be attached to his body. So maybe if Deshaun Watson falls, like we would be stupid to pass up on an opportunity to finally have a real successor in place. And, you know, Roethlisberger talks about retiring every year now, and maybe that's just Ben being Ben, but like, I think at some point you have to worry, and like Landry Jones isn't your long-term plan at quarterback in Pittsburgh. So this could be the year where enough people fall and we have enough starting quarterbacks getting into their late 30s that, you know, maybe we finally see, you know, those teams that you mentioned going for a quarterback late. You know, that if I were the Saints, I would be drafting a quarterback. Everyone who knows their plan says that it's win now. They're not worried about replacing Drew yet. They signed Chase Daniel. So it's like, but I've thought for two or three years, the Saints would be a team that would do that, but they haven't yet.
Then you could lump the Chargers in there. I mean, the Giants are the ones that scare me the most, but I want to tell people real quick about our sponsor. It's our buddies at Loot Crate. And if you're on an epic quest for epic gear, housewares, and collectibles, Loot Crate offers an epic range of pop culture items for less than $20 a month. Whether you're shopping for the geek in your life or if you are that geek, the Loot Crate is the best surprise you know is coming every month. Every month there's a different theme and a new exclusive items that you can only get with Loot Crate. Treat yourself every month or give the gift of geeking out to a friend or loved one. For April, join them as they salute some of our favorite mystery solvers with items from Stranger Things, Batman, The X-Files, Marvel's Jessica Jones. One lucky subscriber will also win a mega crate, including signed copies of Jessica Jones, Alias Volume 1 through 4. So this is what you do. As long as you do it before the 19th at 9 p.m. Pacific to subscribe, you'll get this month's crate. And when that cutoff happens, it's over. So make sure you head to www.lootcrate.com/DynastyBlueprint, enter the code Dynasty Blueprint, and you'll save a couple bucks off any new subscription today that's already under $20 a month.
All right, Matt, I want to take a quick look at some of your second round picks as well. Everybody always cares the most about the first round, but this second round plays out like you project would be really interesting, especially for fantasy football players. At the top of the round, you've got John Ross falling out of the first round to the Rams. And I know you mentioned him in your recent article as well as a player who could be falling down draft boards for NFL teams. What's causing that?
Well, I think with Ross, you have a couple things to worry about. You have a history of knee injuries, one including microfracture surgery. So that's always scary. And now, you know, he right after the combine has surgery on a labrum tear in his shoulder. So you have a guy who really has just struggled to stay healthy. And I think that becomes concerning, especially on a small guy where he doesn't have the biggest, strongest frame. that creates some worries. And the thing that I've always felt like with small receivers is how big is their catch radius? You know, like, and I think John Ross is a guy who doesn't have a great catch radius. So you're going to have a pretty dang accurate quarterback to be able to get him the ball and to give him room to make plays, because that's what where he's survivable, with the ball in his hands. So I just think there's enough concern. Like, listen, he could go mid first round and it wouldn't surprise me, but just as we get closer to the draft, I think he could be one of those guys that just because of the injury bug, like teams could start to cool on him a little bit, even though he's, you know, the fastest man in the history of the combine at this point. Like, I think the injuries and size concerns are enough to push him down.
I think Daniel Jeremiah described him as fast and fragile.
Yeah, that's perfect. Yeah, that's, you know, and it's okay to be short. You don't want to be small, and you don't want to ever be seen as fragile, you know, especially as a receiver. And as a small receiver, so often we want you to make plays over the middle and option routes and bubble screens and plays where you're going to get hit quite a bit. And I think that's a concern with John Ross is, you know, he's not Antonio Brown in terms of thickness and strength. You know, he's not a real sturdy guy. So I personally have pretty big concerns about him moving to the next level and in a pretty deep wide receiver class. Like, you could talk me into Zay Jones or Curtis Samuel if you wanted, you know, someone in that role over John Ross.
Matt, with the 39th overall pick, you have the Jets taking Evan Engram. For fantasy football purposes and for dynasty purposes, I actually think Engram is the best tight end in this class, just a better pass catcher than Howard. And essentially, he's a wide receiver listed as tight end. I think most seem to agree on that. But you've got him going to the Jets, which would concern me a little bit. They have never really, or at least in recent years, haven't really used a tight end. They had the bust with Jason Morrow. So have they not used a tight end because they haven't had one, or is that part of their offensive system? What are your thoughts on Engram with the Jets?
The way I look at the Jets, I think they're an interesting team with Mike Maccagnan and his scouts, because they're like a best player available no matter what team. But I think they've tried to improve the tight end position. You know, they brought in Austin Seferian Jenkins when he got cut by the Buccaneers. So I think they've made an effort to look for tight ends, and they just, for whatever reason, haven't been able to find a guy who would stick yet in their 2 years there. So I can see Evan Engram. Like you said, he's kind of a wide receiver listed at tight end. So I feel like he's not all that different from how you could use Brandon Marshall with, you know, they had a lot of success with comeback routes and you know, back shoulder fades. And especially as, you know, I wouldn't be surprised if they try to move Eric Decker still or end up just cutting him. So you have a need for someone who can come in and be a premier number one target. And what I like about Engram is he has wide receiver speed, but he's as physical as a tight end. Like, he's going to make those tough catches for you. So especially if they have to play one of those young quarterbacks, I think a young quarterback's best friend is an athletic tight end. So getting someone like Engram in there to be that safety valve over the middle would really give the Jets something, like you said, they've never had this. And, you know, John Idzik's crew there really screwed up the pick with Jason Morrow. But Engram is probably, you know, somewhat similar in terms of usage, but I think he's just an all-around better player.
I think a key with the Jets was Gailey. You know, they didn't really use a tight end because he was so four wide heavy. I mean, they used four wide way more than anyone else in the league. Now that he's gone, I think they're looking at it and saying, we don't have a tight end. We better get one.
Yeah, and this is a great year to do that. You know, if you are going to say, oh, man, look at our depth chart right now. You know, we need a tight end, and there's nothing out there in free agency. Like, I think this is a fantastic year to try to get that guy, whether it's Evan Engram in the second round or, you know, if you could get like George Kittle at the top of the fourth. But with what they have with young receivers, with Peak and Robbie Anderson and Quincy Enunwa and Jalen Marshall coming up, like, they have some speed at receiver, and you have some diamonds in the rough there. So, but what you have a tight end right now, like, it's awful. Like, they have nothing that would scare you as a linebacker or a safety.
Matt, for fantasy players, this year is really all about the running back position. We didn't discuss it, but you've got Fournette to the Jaguars at 1-4. You've got McCaffrey 14 overall to the Eagles. Both of those would be major moves in the fantasy football world. But in the second round, you have four more running backs coming off the board, and we want to spend some time on each of those. Joe Mixon, maybe the most talked about player in this whole draft process due to his off-field issues, going to the Bengals at 41. I think a lot of people might think about the Bengals and think they've got Hill and Bernard. They spent relatively high picks on those guys over the past few years. maybe they're not in the market for a running back, but we've said on here before, those guys are not really separating themselves as difference makers for the Bengals. So the chance to get Mixon here in the early to mid part of the second round would be huge for them, I would think.
Yeah, and, you know, like, this is one of those things where you try to mix what you hear with what you see, and I continue to hear that they are not sold on Jeremy Hill long-term. You know, that I don't know if it's a work ethic thing or what, but, like, he is not the answer in their minds long-term. So I think with Mixon, you get – I mean, God, the kid's special. Like, if you just focus on the field, he might be the best running back in this class because of the size, speed, power. Oklahoma coaches told me he was their best receiver. Like, I mean, so he's a total package kind of guy. And like you said, Bernard and Hill haven't separated themselves. So now you bring in a guy potentially who can do, you know, because they are Bernard's your scat back with hands and Hill's your, you know, kind of, you know, basher between the tackles. Now you have a guy who can do both. And I think that's what makes him exciting, is because he is a three down threat. He's a do it all running back. And it's not crazy to think that he would be a rookie of the year candidate in Cincinnati if they gave him the touches that you know, his talent would suggest he should see. You know, especially as their wide receiver crew, I think, has taken a step back a little bit with some of their free agents losses. So, you know, if I have Joe Mixon in the backfield, man, I'm trying to get him to 1,600 yards with rushing and receiving.
Matt, that makes sense. I mean, Burkhead's gone. Geo's coming off an injury. Hill's a total jag. And the Bengals, yeah. I would imagine that he's on their board. And I guess my follow-up question is, do you have a pulse of what percentage of the 32 teams have actually taken him off their board?
Yeah, I reported a while back. I know five teams for sure that he is not on the board for. One team went as far. So he's like, I've never watched the kids film, like, ever. And it's like, how can you do that? But I know of other teams that have a round one grade on his play. So I could say confidently 5 of 32 have him off the board. Beyond that, I don't have an exact number. But, you know, there's – as you know, Matt, you worked in the NFL. Like, he's one of those guys where a lot of people are going to say, oh, we're not going to draft him in the first round. Round two comes around. That's going to be a hard decision, because this is an all-pro caliber running back who's young and has, you know, relatively limited wear and tear because – he was a rotational guy at Oklahoma with Samaje Perine. And so, like, you're going to get a pretty dang good player as long as the off-field checks out and you're comfortable with it. Like, so whether it's – I know Cincinnati's been, you know, very interested. New Orleans has been very interested. I have a good feeling he goes off the board early in round two.
If he would go in round one, the only team I could see it – and I don't even know if he's on their board or not. You would know better than I do. And it's the dream fantasy scenario is the Raiders.
Oh, yeah. And so Raider fans, this is all I know. Raider fans come at me a lot because they'll say, well, Joe Mixon's off our board because, you know, we're against domestic violence. And it's unfortunate that you have to point this out to people, but his was not domestic violence. He did hit a female. It's awful, but they weren't in a relationship together. And I've had people with the Raiders point that out to me, that, like, it actually wasn't domestic violence. Like, you know that, right?
Right. Like, when the press conference rolls around.
Right. He got in a fight, essentially, is what people will say to defend him. Like, it wasn't domestic violence. Like, we hate domestic violence. That wasn't it. And so it's I think he's on the board for the Raiders. I know they met with him at his pro day and had a great interview with him. They worked him out. So I think if you go to all that trouble, the kid's probably on your board. You're right. That is a dream fantasy football fit. I don't know. I think the culture there has changed enough that it would even be a good fit culture-wise, because – you know, you could handcuff him with Derek Carr for the next 4 years and make sure they watch each other's back. And I think you're in a pretty good situation.
Matt, the last player from your mock I wanted to ask you about, and this is one that stood out to me as I was reading it, is Dalvin Cook to the Saints with the 42nd overall pick, actually right behind the Mixon pick. For months, people have viewed him as a first rounder. I know you mentioned he was another player who is – whose stock is falling, according to NFL teams, and could fall out of that first round. So talk to us about Cook's fit with the Saints and maybe reasons that he is falling a bit.
Well, I think he's a great fit with the Saints because he is, you know, as anyone who's watched him play knows, he's a dynamic player and he is a good receiver. He's a great outside runner. And, you know, as they kind of evolve and become a little bit of an older team on offense, I think you start to see that next wave come in. And, you know, he maybe it's the same idea they had with Reggie Bush, but I think you can use him in a lot of the same ways, but he's a stronger, more durable player. So the reason he falls, I'll tell you, like, as you guys know, because I'm sure you've done mock drafts where you're going down the list and you're like, oh, I just went through the first round and didn't have Dalvin Cook in there. And
All right.
you know, it's not intentional sometimes. It just happens because you're connecting dots of, okay, I've heard this team likes this guy and this team likes this guy. And people fall. And it's not that you don't like the player. It's just it doesn't end up being a fit. So I think some of it with Cook is the off-field is a little scary. You know, he's been there's a pattern there. I think it's about once a year he gets in trouble and the police are involved, even though he's never actually been convicted of a crime. And then you have the injury worries. You know, he's got banged up shoulders, he had hamstring issues, he has fumble issues. So I think there are just enough question marks that you start to look at Dalvin Cook with his question marks. It's like, man, would you rather have that or would you rather have Christian McCaffrey, who ran better, tested better, and is a squeaky clean kid off the field? Or would you rather have Alvin Kamara, who has less wear and tear and no injury history to worry about? So, yeah, that's the way I think that where the casual fan maybe doesn't always understand what goes on in a draft room is, you know, it's risk versus reward. And I think with Cook, you just end up with enough question marks that you could talk yourself out of him a little bit.
And you mentioned it too. I mean, he didn't test well, and that's a red
Right.
flag, although his tape kind of shows differently. And he really struggles in protection. I mean, he may take a while to get on the field.
Yeah. Especially for a guy that you value his pass catching ability. So, like,
Right.
to be a pass catcher, you also got to be a blocker, you know. And I think that is an area where he's going to struggle a lot because he, you know, I know early on there were people saying, oh, this is the next Jamaal Charles. And I never saw that kind of burst from him. Or, you know, I always thought that Jamaal, for being a small guy, would sell out in pass protection. I've just never seen that from Dalvin Cook.
Matt, I know you've got to run soon. I'd love to hear your thoughts on a couple of players that I feel like are trending either up or down. The first one is Deontay Foreman. A lot of people viewed him as just a banger, you know, no third down ability, but he ran really well at his pro day. I know you're a big Texas guy, so I know you're locked in on that situation. Tell us what you're seeing with Foreman.
I was going to say, you can see the wall behind me with all the burnt orange on it. So I love Foreman. Some of it's the bias, you know, obviously being a Texas fan, but I've always felt like I'm a little harder on Longhorn players than everyone else because you've seen them for so long. So with Foreman, I never got the banger or the Derrick Henry comparisons because he's so much faster and shiftier. He's more compact. What I worry about Foreman, honestly, is I don't think he's actually great at first contact. I think he does a good job running away from defenders, but he can be a little timid with that initial. You know, if he meets a linebacker in a hole, I don't know that he's falling forward. So that's my concern with him. I think that the Texas offense really limited in showing what he can do as a receiver, and the pro day highlighted that he is a good athlete. His twin brother's a receiver at Texas. Like, the athletic bloodlines are there, and you've seen glimpses in practice and sometimes in games. So I have him around to Oakland. If they don't get Marshawn Lynch, I think he's a pretty logical guy to come in there and be that same type of player.
Bit of a fumbler, though, right?
Can be. It's weird. It's a lot of effort fumbles. Like, he's pushing the pile to get an extra 2 or 3 yards and the ball gets stripped out. So he's not an open field fumbler, but yes, I mean, he did have ball control issues, but it's always at the end of the play for him.
Matt, what about Curtis Samuel? You mentioned him earlier. He seems to be moving up the board. I've even heard a little bit of word that he could sneak into the end of the first round.
Yeah, his agent was telling me the same thing. So, you know, always take that for what it's worth. But they feel like, you know, they feel like teams say they like our guy late first, early second round. And that meshes up with what I've heard too. So he is a riser. I think with Curtis Samuel, you know, his athleticism is special. And you are probably going to have to scheme him touches, but he is a four down asset because he could be a great return man as well. And so I think, you know, he's kind of going to get caught in that tweener, you know, label, because is he a running back? Is he a receiver? I don't know what he plays. I don't care. I just want the ball in his hands because he's electric. And, you know, in the right scheme, I think he could be a great, like, fantasy player because he is going to give you touches. He's going to give you points. But it's all about scheme, you know. And he's one of those guys, like, after the draft, we should talk and be like, okay, if he ends up in, like, Pittsburgh, yes. you know, if he ends up somewhere, you know, Houston or somewhere like, you know, where they're not going to know how to use him, I would stay away. But in the right system, he could be a hell of a player.
Kansas City didn't seem like a good fit, and they got an awful lot out of Tyreek Hill, though.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. Yeah. And you know, if you're looking at a guy who can be a, you know, exceptional return man, and I love that Andy changed things up a little bit to incorporate Tyreek Hill more, especially as the year went on. You know, what you saw what he could do. So hopefully a team would kind of see Curtis Samuel the same way of like, okay, let's you know, maybe we slowly acclimate this guy into the game plan, and then by, you know, week 12, all right, let's you know, throttle up a little bit and see what he can do.
All right, Matt, before you go, the last player I want to ask you about, and he's not one that's in your two-round mock, I think viewed as more of a day three prospect, the Baylor wide receiver Ishmael Zamora. He also had some off-field issues, did not get invited to the combine because of those, but isn't quite as publicized as Mixon and some of these other guys. What are your thoughts on him?
He is a great athlete. You know, what he can do after the catch is pretty special. And you know, I think he is a little bit of a scheme fit guy as well. You know, you put him in Pittsburgh or Arizona, you know, somewhere where they're going to get him in space and let him do things down the field. He could be a very dangerous player. The off field stuff is pretty bad there. I mean, if listeners, you maybe don't want to see the video, but he got upset with a dog and beat it, and it was caught on camera and published, and that's why he was banned from the combine. And you know, it's one of those things, you can't make excuses for these guys, but it's something that the teams are going to have to think about. You know, is it a pattern or is it a mistake? And I think that's the question you have, or the debate you have internally with every player with a red flag is, okay, is this guy a bad person or did he make a bad decision? And with Zamora, everything I've heard back is like, he's just kind of a kid who's, you know, not very street smart. You know, he's immature. He just needs to grow up a little bit, but because this receiver class is pretty deep, you could find five or six guys like him who don't have any questions off the field that are going to go ahead of him. So I think I have him as a late round player when you put all the cards on the table, but I wouldn't be shocked if he comes off in the middle rounds just because what he can do for you after the catch.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. Well, Matt, I know you've got some other things. Like we said, this is your busiest time of year, but before you go, just tell our listeners where they can find your work.
Yeah, I mean, follow on Twitter at NFL Draft Scout or download the Bleacher Report app. I think everything I do probably goes in there, especially this time of year. So right now we're doing the big NFL Draft 400 series. So it's scouting reports, grades, and player comparisons for all the top 400 players in the draft.
Very nice.
All right. Well, thanks a lot, Matt. And you mentioned it, but we'd love to have you back on after the draft to talk more about these players.
Absolutely. I think that's the best time, and like not enough people go back after the draft and say, I liked this guy as a second rounder, but for that team, like I love the fit. So yeah, we'll definitely need to make that happen.
All right. Thanks a lot, Matt.
Yeah. Thanks, fellas.
Well, we want to thank Matt again for joining us. Just some great insight from him. I love checking out his work at Bleacher Report. He's putting out mock drafts all the time, especially as the draft gets closer. But Matt, I thought what we would do next is take a little bit of a deeper look at his mock draft, his two-round mock that recently was published, and take a look at the dynasty value of these players. If Matt is right, if Leonard Fournette ends up in Jacksonville, O.J. Howard lands in Buffalo, what does the dynasty value look like for these players? He's got a lot of intriguing landing spots, I think. I already mentioned Fournette in Jacksonville, Christian McCaffrey in Philadelphia, Mike Williams in Tennessee, Corey Davis in Arizona, along with Cook in New Orleans and Joe Mixon in Cincinnati, with those latter two being second rounders. So I think right now most people view those players as the top six. If it happened this way, who would be your first round or your first overall rookie pick?
As it stands right now, if we were to have a draft in not knowing where any team went, I would be torn between Mixon and Fournette at the 1-1. You know, if you have a rookie draft today, this circumstances with Fournette going to Jacksonville, and I would think he would immediately go past Yeldon and what's his face, the banger. I forget his name.
Chris Ivory.
But again, not a very good offensive line, but I could see it happening. You know, Coughlin is going to be in charge there, and I think he's going to want to run the ball and make Bortles' life easier. But the one thing I disagreed with Matt was, boy, if he goes to Cincinnati, Mixon could rack up 1,600 yards. Well, I think they're going to have, like, the worst offensive line in the league. You know, so either one of those landing spots, there'd be a little bit of competition for touches. You know, you wouldn't be the man. And I don't think either line's all that good. So I would lean with Fournette as my 1-1 if this draft panned out as he has it, you know, mocked.
Yeah, I think I agree. The tempting one for me with Fournette would not be Mixon, but would be Corey Davis, the wide receiver landing in Arizona. You know, it looks like this might be Fitzgerald's last year. Michael Floyd flopped out of Arizona. So they've got some guys I like that we've talked about on here before. John Brown, J.J. Nelson, Jaron Brown. But none of those guys are Corey Davis. So I think I would be tempted to take Corey Davis at 1, and then Fournette would probably be my 2.
And you would think that Davis would be a day one starter opposite Larry and the obvious successor next year as the 1.
Right, right. So if you like Fournette at 1, does it come down to Davis versus Cook? I'm sorry, versus Mixon for you?
No, I'd still take Mixon at 2, probably Davis at 3, and now I don't know.
Yeah, it gets tough. So Dalvin Cook, of course, was viewed as the favorite for 1-1 to be the 1-1 for so long. A poor combine and some of the other things Matt mentioned have pushed him down. Landing in New Orleans, though, would be a nice spot. McCaffrey in Philadelphia.
I think McCaffrey would be my 4.
Yeah, I think McCaffrey would be my – I think I'd actually take McCaffrey over Mixon.
Would you?
And Matt kind of alluded to this. He was speaking more about Zamora, but if you've got these two players and one is squeaky clean on and off the field and one has a history, you know, it makes it a pretty easy decision. If their tape is similar, if you think their talent is similar, in this case, McCaffrey's landing in Philadelphia. Ryan Matthews is assumed to be either gone or a non-factor. Sproles is a million years old, and Wendell Smallwood is just a guy. I think McCaffrey would be the guy in Philadelphia, and taking him really any lower than 3 kind of feels like stealing to me.
I agree with you, although would he beat out Sproles for the passing down duties immediately? Not that Sproles is a long-term roadblock in any way, shape, or form. And would he ever be a goal line guy? You know, they could still add LeGarrette Blount or somebody, you know. Those type of backs don't always produce huge fantasy numbers if he's not a stud receiver. But I mostly agree with you.
Okay, so do you like McCaffrey at – you like McCaffrey at 4 then?
Yes, I would go Fournette, Mixon, Davis, McCaffrey.
Okay. So that leaves in that top tier Mike Williams to Tennessee, Dalvin Cook to New Orleans. And then, of course, the question becomes – does that top tier remain the same? Do you take O.J. Howard as a top 10 draft pick with the Bills? Do you take him over, you know, maybe over Cook?
No. I mean, like, I love the landing spot. I think Buffalo would be a much better football team with him. If I'm a Bills fan, I'm happy. But I just – he's a tight end. You know, like, for dynasty right. reasons, you know, I mean, that's the only – it's not his fault, but – he's a tight end, so no.
What about and we didn't get to talk to Matt about it, but he's got Alvin Kamara with the Colts.
That's interesting.
That would be a nice landing spot. He's got Deontay Real Foreman nice. With Oakland, as he mentioned, at the end of the second round. So I think between Howard and Kamara and maybe even Foreman, what we're viewing as the top 6 could get shaken up a little bit.
I mean, Kamara to the Colts is really nice. You know, I mean, I think Gore is slipping, and nobody likes to say that. And at most, he has this year. Kamara's a do-it-all guy, good receiver. And like you said, Foreman to the Raiders. Kind of like we were talking about Mixon to the Raiders, but Foreman to the Raiders wouldn't be all that much worse.
Right. Yeah, I think I agree with you, though. So I think the top 6 would remain remain in that top tier. For me, it would be Davis, Fournette, McCaffrey as an Eagle with the 3rd pick, Mixon, Cook, and Williams. And that kind of feels like we're sliding Williams a little bit in this scenario. He's a top 12 pick. We're taking 2 second round running backs over him.
Good young quarterback for the next foreseeable future.
Right. The
moral, I don't love Williams though.
I don't either, but
as a player,
I think, and I talked about this on Twitter months and months ago, that as you get down towards the end of the season, you're out of the playoff hunt in your dynasty league, and your mindset just moves to, I want to move my old players. I want to get the best draft pick I can. You're trying to tank without tanking and trying to improve your draft spot. I mentioned on Twitter, though, I don't think this year that was necessary. My advice was make the playoff run if you can. And even if you fall short, you're picking fifth or sixth. And you're getting a good quality player. And that's exactly what exactly how it's playing out. And even if you made that playoff push and you were the last seed and you lost in the first round, now you're picking seventh and you're still getting, in this scenario, you're getting maybe Alvin Kamara with the Colts, or you're getting OJ Howard as a top 10 pick. So, you know, this is a rare year for that, but that top tier is just so deep.
Yeah. I mean, the way this lays out, the difference between 1-1 and 1-9 isn't as drastic as most years, and certainly the distance between 1-1 and 1-6 isn't as distant as most years. What if Fournette were to land in Carolina or mix into Oakland? Or, you know, like, what's the dream scenario that one of these running backs would clearly be 1-1? Is there one out there? I mean, to me, the Raiders would be a spot.
I think the Raiders are a spot if it's a first rounder. So,
but I don't know who that would be. I mean, I guess it could be Cook, but I just think they'd take a bigger back.
Yeah, I don't think they're taking Mixon in the first round.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, it could be Cook. I just don't, I really get held up with taking a second round player over a first round player. If the NFL is telling us that Fournette's worth the fourth overall pick, then how can I take the 41st overall pick ahead of him? Which that's where Matt had Mixon.
Yeah, but Fournette didn't punch a female in the face. You know, like, because he's such a strange circumstance, if he goes in the early second round, that means every team probably had a top 10 grade on him.
Okay. Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, just knowing how NFL front offices work, like, we can't use a first on this guy, but boy, when we leave Thursday night, and we're laying in our bed going, there's one guy out there that's better than every other football player that hasn't been drafted yet, and it's Mixon. I want him, you know, because we have a top 10 grade on him, but we can't take him in the first round.
Well, that's one of the – I love that part of Thursday night and Friday during the day of the draft is the shuffling and the rumors that go along with teams wanting to get to that top of the second round.
Yeah.
To nab their guy. That's always fun. Okay, so in this scenario, we've got the top six. We disagree a little bit, but in general, we agree the top six remains the top six. Who would be your seventh pick? Is it Kamara as a Colt? Yeah.
Yeah, I think I go Kamara, Foreman, OJ.
I think I would agree. What about Njoku as a Lion? Is that...
I don't love it because I think I love the player. I'd rather he ended up in New York with the Giants or Denver, where he was clearly the one. And you kind of look at Tate Jones, Ebron, Njoku. They all, to me, are going to kind of eat the same amount of pie. You know what I mean? Like, the balls get spread around a lot. Get it out of Stafford's hands quick. I wouldn't love that landing spot, but although I really like the player. The one I would be interested in, though, is what about Ross to the Rams?
Yeah, I'm already not a Ross fan. I've talked about that.
Right.
A lot of what Matt mentioned are some of the same concerns I have as a dynasty owner, worried about his size, worried about the injuries. And the Rams to me doesn't seem like a great landing spot. You know, it's a new coaching staff, so we don't want to assume too much, but in general, that team is still a ways away. Overall, in Matt's two rounds here, I don't love the landing spots really for any of the receivers, especially those second round guys. You've got Ross to the Rams, Zay Jones to the Chargers, and then towards the end of the round, Cooper Kupp to Baltimore. They need some wide receiver depth, but I don't love Cup. I do like Curtis Samuel. He's got him going to the Buccaneers. As a team that has some needs both in the backfield and on their receiver depth chart, I would love Samuel there. He might be my he might be my eighth or ninth pick, actually.
Yeah, late first type of guy.
Right.
Possibly. You know, you make some good points about Ross. My initial thoughts were, let's think about the Rams going forward with the Redskins way of doing thing, new head coach. He would obviously be your DeSean Jackson type. But while that sounds great for the NFL, and, you know, how many touchdowns is Ross going to score in his career?
Yeah. For me, Ross is not even
– He's not a first-rounder for you.
He's not a first-rounder for me, okay. No. I'm not really
– You like Njoku better. You like Engram better.
I would take any of the tight ends over him. I mean, he's more – and I think Matt said this. He's closer to the Zay Jones, Curtis Samuel group than he is to Davis or Williams for me. So
in the real world or dynasty, you mean?
Both.
Okay.
Yeah.
I think certainly in dynasty, you know, cause touchdowns are so important.
Right. I'm just thinking of some players that are kind of in that first round talk that are not in Matt's two round mock. And the one that jumps to my mind is one of my favorites, Juju Smith-Schuster. Matt has him, I assume, projected as maybe a third or fourth round pick. And going back to what I said earlier, even though I love Juju, it's hard to take a third or fourth rounder in the first round of your dynasty rookie draft, especially as deep as this class is.
Yeah, I mean, that's a good point. I mean, obviously, and you keep going back to this, and it makes a lot of sense. I mean, obviously, the NFL will always know much more about these guys than we do. You know, I mean, the draft tells us what they're thinking. They never lie on draft day. And that makes an awful lot of sense. You know, that, boy, this dude went in the fourth round. I can't be super excited. I can't take him over an early second round receiver or something along those lines. But there also are four or five wideouts that were not picked in his mock, you know, that I like, you know, that I think are pretty good players. Guys like Taywan Taylor, Josh Reynolds, Carlos Henderson, Smith-Schuster, like you mentioned. You
know, Chris Godwin.
Yeah, I absolutely forgot about Godwin. And I like all those guys more than I like Cooper Kupp.
Yeah, I agree. I'm not a big Kupp guy. And we don't want to get too stuck on the draft position, because a player going in the second round that might be a surprise, maybe it is Cooper Kupp. That just shows us what one team thinks, right? One team values Cooper Kupp as a second rounder. A player falling tells us what every team feels about them. You know, if Juju falls to the fourth round, that tells us essentially every NFL team valued him in that range or even lower. Now, from your scouting background, does that mesh?
Say what you said again. I want to make sure. I don't want to criticize what you said, you know, about the NFL viewing them.
I'm saying that a player being drafted earlier than we might expect doesn't really tell us much about what the NFL as a whole view, how the NFL as a whole values that player.
Agreed. You know, one team might just love him.
One team loves that player. One team wanted to make sure they got their guy.
That's the only thing we can be sure of with that amount of data.
But a player falling tells us essentially what every team thinks.
See, that's what I disagree with, though. All it means is they like the receiver on the board better. You know, like, how do I explain this without being too confusing? That, okay, everybody likes Davis and Williams as their top two receivers, and they're gone. And I'm in the market for a receiver. And I love Cooper Kupp, which isn't true. And he's number three on my list. And I barely like him more than Henderson and Smith-Schuster. So, therefore, I take Kupp. You know, like, sometimes guys fall in the draft basically for bad luck, because maybe they were the fourth receiver on the Browns board and number 5, 6, 7, 8 were gone, but three wasn't. You know what I mean? Like, you can get, you know, blocked just because bad luck too. And we never know that, but you just know that's how drafts go sometimes. Like, man, I can't believe both those guys are there when all these receivers that we liked less are off the board.
Yeah, that makes sense. That does make sense. And if it, again, in this scenario, if Juju is a third rounder and he lands in a spot that's enticing, then I'm still taking him over Cooper Kupp. I'm taking him,
right,
you know, probably over Zay Jones and maybe even Ross, even though they're high second rounders. I don't love those landing spots.
I don't think Zay Jones is going to end up on any of my teams either.
There's just so many wide receivers, and Jones is one of them, and you've named them already. Taywan Taylor and Henderson and Godwin and Kupp is one as well, that are just kind of, I don't want to say coming out of nowhere, because these are names that have been on our minds throughout this draft process, but these are not names that people, if you play in Devy leagues, those are not guys that you really maybe even knew of this time last year. So there's just so many wide receivers that have bolstered their stock over the last year, and especially over these last few months as we become more familiar with them. It's good news for dynasty owners, because it just shows the depth of the receiver position, that this time last year we thought, oh, it's Davis and it's Williams and it's Cortland Sutton who went back to school, and that's really it.
Juju.
And Juju, right.
Yeah.
So this depth is kind of surprising, but it's a good surprise, certainly.
The guy that Godwin to me is noteworthy in that regard too, because I'm not getting on Matt's case. He didn't put him in the first two rounds for whatever reason. You know, mock drafts are hard. But Dynasty doesn't work this way, but if I owned 112, I would give you that for Chris Godwin right now in a heartbeat. And I probably would give 111, and I might give 110. You know, back to that conversation we were having, would you rather have O.J. Howard or, you know, Foreman if they landed in those spots? I think when it's said and done, Godwin will be in that tier.
Okay, so let's go back to our mock draft, our Dynasty rookie mock draft, based on Matt Miller's mock draft. We feel good about the top six. We both see Alvin Kamara as closing into that group, I think, as the seventh spot. Being with the Colts, right? What I'm hearing you say is once you get past that, then you're starting to consider, along with Foreman and Howard and Samuel, you're maybe considering Godwin and Juju and some of these other players that in this scenario, we don't know where they are.
Yes, certainly over Cooper Kupp and those guys. You know, like I think Kamara would be my clear seven and maybe closer to six than he would be to eight. I would have Foreman because he's a Raider. That's awesome. Probably would be my eight. And then I might want Godwin over Zay Jones with the Chargers or Ross with the Rams or Njoku with the Lions.
Right. That helps differentiate these tiers. And I think that, especially this time of year, that's what is so important is, you know, we can't say exactly who should you pick at 1.04. I don't know. There's so much to be decided that – we just can't say that, but putting these players into tiers has a lot more value and will help you prepare for your rookie drafts. Let's look, I think I know how this conversation will go, but let's look at the quarterbacks. Matt had Trubisky to Cleveland, Watson to the Giants, Mahomes to Houston, and DeShone Kizer to Kansas City. Anything there change your mind or make you want to get any of those guys in the late second round of a rookie draft?
I would rank them Mahomes, Trubisky, Kizer, Watson. I don't like Watson that much, first of all. I mean, and I love Mahomes. But Mahomes would have a pretty clear, you know, starting, you know, path, as would Trubisky. They both could be opening day starters or, you know, first-year starters for sure. The other guys wouldn't be. You're waiting. They're roster clogging you.
Right. So you're not considering any of those guys before the third round of rookie drafts.
I might take Mahomes. Yeah, I mean, this is off the top of my head, but I might take him at 22 overall, maybe at the end of the second round. I mean, maybe I couldn't come up with 25 tight ends, running backs, receivers I'd like better. I mean, I think that's conceivable.
Okay. All right, I think maybe the player, and we'll wrap up on this note, I think maybe the player in my mind that would be losing value here would be Evan Engram with the Jets. I would not love that fit at all. They've got so many needs, so much to figure out. Matt mentioned a clear path to playing time and targets, which would be obvious, but still, that would he's a guy I really like and view as a late first round rookie pick, but that would hurt his value in my opinion.
Yeah, and Matt mentioned this, and you're reading it more and more that there's less and less chance, it sounds like, Eric Decker returns, you know, that they would like to trade him. And, you know, they're doing what I said. They're going to take the Browns, you know, productive struggle approach to rebuilding, you know, that they're just going to get rid of all their big old dudes and play a bunch of young guys and accumulate draft picks like crazy, and that's what they need to do. But it's going to be ugly.
So there may be – we didn't talk much about them in the Matt's mock draft, but there may be a team that should consider moving down if they get the opportunity.
Yeah, I think that's a really good opportunity. I think that's a really good chance that they absolutely could move down throughout the draft, pick up future picks. But I also think they could screw us a little bit in Dynasty and draft a tight end or a wide receiver pretty high. And we'd all go, ooh.
All right. Well, we had some great conversation today with Matt Miller of the Bleacher Report, and also some good conversation about what a rookie draft might look like based on his mock draft. We want to thank Matt again. We'll be back next week with more Dynasty Blueprint.